Without further ado, it's my honor to introduce Michael J. Fomorka.
I'm Michael, I'm an alcoholic.
Freaking suspense is killing me waiting. It's like going into the dentist, you know? Something you really don't want to do, you know you got to do it, and it's just waiting and waiting and waiting. I'm grateful to be here tonight. I want to thank Kristen for asking me to speak. Joe and I were just sitting back there, and he said to me, boy, the rooms have changed. And I whispered back to him, and I said, I'm just grateful I'm still here, you know. The faces change daily, you know, and by the grace of God, I'm fortunate enough to still be here, you know, and that wasn't my plan when I got here. My sobriety birthday is October 2nd of 2003. I just celebrated 12 years in October. My sponsor is Patrick S. My home group is the Orchid Lions Den, Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock. The treasurer of that meeting, I've had a commitment in sobriety every year that I've stayed sober except for 1 year. And I created a lot of wreckage that year. You know, go figure. You know, I wasn't active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sure created a lot of wreckage that year. I'm originally from back east. I moved out here in 1998 from northeastern Pennsylvania. I was working at a Ford dealership. I was in the throes of alcoholism. I had just gotten out of a long relationship, and the dealership that I worked for, the dealer principal offered to move me and two technicians a little south of Fresno to come out here and to go to work in a dealership. And thought, absolutely, you know, sun, sand, women, California, let's go, you know. And my next thought was either I'm going to go to California and I'm going to die, or I'm going to go to California and get cleaned up. And my first night in California, dealership gave us a car to use, and me and one of the guys that moved out here, he was my running partner, we were so drunk driving that vehicle. How we didn't get in an accident is beyond me, you know. And the party continued, you know. It took 2 weeks of being in California to find the people that I needed to find to get what I needed. It's funny, the first night that I scored, I loved cocaine, by the way. I'm a drug addict as well. Love cocaine, man, my first love. And I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's my story. The first time I scored from this guy, he cleaned the DMV. And I had to meet him in the DMV parking lot to score. And I can remember pulling in that parking lot and there being cameras there and thinking, man, this is sketchy, you know? But the disease takes over, you know? There could have been a cop in that parking lot, you know, I hadn't used in how long. It didn't matter, you know. It made no difference whether there was a camera on me or not. And I thought I hit the jackpot. I met a dealer that delivered, you know. It's like, man, this is awesome. And, you know, I ran hard again once I moved out here. I got a little ahead of myself. My family, no one in my immediate family has a problem with drugs or alcohol. I have never once... Let me rephrase that. Back in October, my father came out to visit. I saw him take a shot at tequila. It's the first time in 43 years I've seen him take a shot. My mother, if I've seen her drink a 12-pack through my life, is a lot. But the disease is definitely in my family, and I believe this is a genetic disease. I believe this was something I was born with. I think my first addiction was chocolate milk as a kid. Used to crave it. You know, and it just turned on to you know, to bigger and better things. And so I can't say that I blame my family. I can't say that I blame the life I grew, the how I was raised. I couldn't have asked for better parents, couldn't have asked for better upbringing. My father owned a business. I worked for him. He was in the automotive business as well. I worked for him, and, you know, it was just life, you know. You know, I didn't drink a lot through high school, smoked a little bit of weed here and there, and about 18 is when I really started, you know, drinking and using, and it was on from there. About 2 years, probably I was about 20, 21 years old, I tried cocaine for the first time, and it was just like, where have you been all my life? Where have you been? You know, I finally was able to put something in me that made me feel okay, you know. You know, I'll be honest with you, I never liked the taste of alcohol, never liked the taste of beer. You know, there's few, you know, bottles out there that I liked. I just liked what it did for me, you know. I felt okay when I drank and used, you know. I felt like the world was at peace. I felt like I fit in. I felt like I belonged. The committee wasn't going in my head. I was relaxed, and it was okay. You know, so I moved out here, started getting loaded right away. The dealership that I was working for, I saw that they were starting to tank, and I have a cousin here in Santa Maria, and I kept in touch with him, and I'd come down to visit him on the weekends, started handing out resumes, and a dealer called me here and asked me to come to work for them. And once again, I'm going to move down there, and I'm either going to die or I'm going to get cleaned up. And I can remember the day that I was packing the loading van. I had a big piece of glass with a mound of coke on it. And, you know, it was do a little bit, load a little of the van, do a little bit, load a little of the van, you know. And my dealer was actually helping me move, you know. He's a great dude, man. He's an absolute great dude. You know, he was. Great guy. And last box to move, and that sheet of glass with all the coke on it was on top of the box. And we bumped the box, and it fell, and the glass broke. It was like, ah! Oh. And that was how I moved, you know. That was the way I moved out of, it was Reedley, the town that I lived in. And, you know, pulled into town. I moved in with my cousin. Once again, 2 weeks later, found the people I needed to find, and off and running. And, man, the scrapes that I've gotten into, the things that I've done, how I've never sat in jail, how I'm not dead, is absolutely beyond me, you know. I was born and raised Catholic, and I was always had the notion that I was going to be punished for the things that I did. You know, the nuns in school, you know, hitting me with rulers and, you know, pounding it into me, and, you know, I just figured, you know what, I'm screwed. Why change now? You know, it's what's going to be the difference? And, you know, I got sober and I realized that there was a God working in my life, you know. Even though I didn't believe that God was there, or I had an inkling in the back of my mind, and, you know, my sponsor says it was that pinch hitter God, you know. I called him when I needed him to come in. And, you know, that was when I talked to God, when I was in a jam, you know. Get me out of this one. I swear to God I'll never do this again. Please just get me out of this one. And he'd get me out of it, and, you know, back at it again. You know, I've had guns drawn on me. I've been in many fights, you know, broken elbows, totaled cars, broken hands, you know, you name it. You know, I get into a fight one night back east, and totally loaded, get into a fight with a guy, three of his buddies jump in, and I take off, and turns out it's behind my house. I jump a fence, I flop over the fence, I didn't clear it, and I come down, I break both elbows. Well, I'm so loaded, I end up getting the car that I'm in, it's a stick shift, I drive it a half hour to continue partying. Come to the next morning like this, and I can't open my arms. I broke both elbows, you know, and managed to drive that stick back home. And I can remember my parents saying to me, we have a reservation for you in rehab. You know, that was 1997, and I said, I don't need rehab. You know, I use recreationally. I drink a little bit. What's the big deal, you know? But growing up, I had an aunt who was a heroin addict. And I always used her as the measuring stick, you know? If I ever do what she does, I have a problem, you know? If I ever get into the scrapes, if I ever do the jail time, if I ever stick a needle in my arm, if I this, if I that, you know? And, you know, I never got to where she was, but, you know, they were all yets for me, you know? So, you know, that was always my excuse. And, so I didn't end up going to rehab, came out here, moved to Santa Maria, off and running again, and, you know, it was just the same thing, you know, time after time after time, as you all know, you know. I could stand here all night and tell you guys a drunkalog, or, you know how to drink. You know, the thing that we don't know how to do is we don't know how to stay sober. You know, when we're brand new, we don't know how to stay sober. You know, all that we know how to do is to think about it, think about it, think about it, obsess on it, make a phone call, go get loaded, you know, run to the liquor store, you know. It wasn't until I had, you know, a little bit of sobriety under my belt after four relapses that it dawned on me that when the thought comes, pick up the phone. Don't wait for the obsession, you know, because once the obsession kicks for me, I'm toast. I am out the door. And I don't care what it is that I'm dealing with, you know, whether it's alcohol, drugs, gambling, buying cars, sex, whatever it is, you know, when I think about it and think about it and think about it and I start obsessing on it, all bets are off, you know. I could call someone and talk about it, but by that time my mind has made the decision that, you know, I'm off to the races. So, so I was involved with a married woman. And, you know, that was my best thinking when I was getting loaded, you know, date a married woman, I don't have to be accountable. Not thinking of the mess I was going to create in her life. Her husband go to work, she'd come to the house, and she found some drugs in my house, and they're not mine. My cousin was over, he needed to leave them in the fridge, not mine. And, you know, that happened twice, and after the second time, I was on a three-day run, and I broke down, and I said, I can't live like this anymore. And she said, let's get you some help. And, you know, we sat and we looked through the phone book that day, and we made some phone calls, and I eventually ended up in rehab. And 3 years prior to that, my manager came to me, and he asked me if I had a cocaine problem. And this is the job that I'm still working. You know, I've weathered the storm. I've been there. June will be 18 years. I'm at this job. If that isn't a loving God in my life, I don't know what is, you know, because left to my own making, you know, I don't do stuff like that, you know, but because of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys have showed me a different way to live, and I'm able to work and live with other people outside the rooms. You know, so he came to me, asked me if I had a cocaine problem. No, I'm fine. I don't have a problem. And he said, if you ever need help, come and see me. Just let me know. And that girl and I sat, and we made the phone call. And I went into work the next day, and I went into his office, and I said, do you remember that day? And he said, yep. And I said, I need help. And he said, go and get help. He said, and we'll save your job for you. And I went to a 28-day program in Santa Barbara. I came out, I put together 8 months of sobriety, and I started thinking again, you know, my best work, I started thinking, you know, one more time I could just, you know, jump in and jump out, and I did that, you know, and in the meantime I got a sponsor. Joe Kay was my first sponsor. Joe, I thank you for all that you've taught me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't tell anybody after that first relapse. I thought, I'm going to keep this a secret. And the reason I wanted to keep it a secret is because I got sober on my belly button birthday, you know? So God forbid I screw my date up, you know? So I kept it a secret, and I can remember going to the Monday night meeting, and Joanne was there, and they called for newcomers, and I sat there, and I didn't raise my hand. And she looked at me afterwards, and she said, it's okay, we know. It's like, how do you know, you know? And I felt about that big. went 90 days, I still didn't tell anybody, and I relapsed again. And I told Joe about it, and Joe said, no big deal. He said, just change your sobriety date. It's not a problem. See, I'm thinking I'm going to tell somebody, and they're going to say, you know what, you need to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not wanted, you know. That's not what we do here, you know. You drink, you got to go, because that's what they told me all my life, you know. Every time I screwed up, you know, bars, people, places, things, you know, you're not wanted here anymore, you need to leave. And it was different. You know, someone said it's okay. And I came back, and I think I put together another 90 days, and I relapsed again. And then I came back, and I said, you know what? I need structure. I need structure to work this program. I need a workbook, you know? Mm-hmm. So I tried working out of this workbook, and I made it to maybe the fourth step, didn't do it. Put 15 months together, white knuckle sobriety, and I was hanging out with some people that I shouldn't have been hanging out with. I was out with Luke and Pam. We went to the Saturday night meeting, and afterwards we went out to dinner. And if somebody would have told me that night I was going to relapse, I would have told them, "You're absolutely crazy. There is no way I'm going to pick up tonight." And they dropped me off. I went home and got together with some people I shouldn't have been with. And the words came out of my mouth, can you score? And as I'm asking them, it's like, what are you doing? You know, and the next thing I knew, I was in Motel 6 in Lompoc getting it on. And Joe called me the next morning, and we were supposed to go for a motorcycle ride that day. And I said, I'm not going to make it. I'm out. And he said, what do you mean you're out? I said, I relapsed last night. He said, I'll come and get you. And I said, no, I started this. I'm going to finish it. And that lasted for 2 days. And once again, I felt that pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. And my mind told me, you know what? You've tried this deal now 4 times, and you can't stay sober. You can't get honest. You can't do this deal. You guys can do this deal. You guys can get honest. But I didn't think that I could get honest. I did not think I could get honest and stay sober. And thanks to Luke, he came and picked me up and took me to a Monday night meeting. And I sat and I cried through most of that meeting, and I didn't think I was going to be able to stay sober. You know, I made it through that week, and I came to the Friday night podium meeting, and I walked out of this meeting, and I said to Joe, I said, fuck these meetings, fuck these people, I can't do this shit. And he said, why don't you go home tonight and go to sleep and call me in the morning? Just don't drink. And I did that, and when I woke up in the morning, it was amazing. I had a totally different outlook, you know. And for once, I learned that if you don't pick up right then and there, if you sleep through it, if you talk to somebody, it'll change, you know. The feelings aren't going to kill you. The emotions aren't going to kill you, you know. Don't let it turn to an obsession. And I woke up that next morning, I called Joe, and it was like, man, what was wrong with me last night, you know? Completely different person, feeling completely different. And, you know, and the next thing I knew, I put 30 days together and 60 days and 90 days, and I celebrated a year. I had about a year and a half, and I can remember getting scared because I was coming up on that 15 months. I was starting to get into territory where I hadn't been before sober. And I ride a motorcycle, and a bunch of us were on our way to Reno to a bike run. And we were going up Freeway 14. We pulled out of an intersection, we got on it. Next thing you know, I looked down, we're going 120 miles an hour. I got speed wobble in the front end of my bike, and I went down going 110 miles an hour. And when I saw the pavement coming to me, I said goodbye. I thought I was dead. And I stopped rolling, and my first thought was, holy shit, I'm alive. My second thought was, am I paralyzed? I popped up, I'm in the middle of a freeway, and I'm just like, what is going on? And, you know, talk about God working in my life. There was a CHP that was passing the other way at the time of the accident. You know, and he turned around and he stopped traffic and, you know, he got on the radio and, you know, he had an ambulance there for me. And, you know, I got to spend a week in Lancaster with another friend in sobriety who was recuperating from a motorcycle accident as well. And we got to sit for a week and talk recovery. for 1 week straight, that's all we talked was recovery. And that accident allowed me to stay sober. It allowed me to get deeper into Alcoholics Anonymous. It sure made me grateful for my life. It sure made me realize how sacred life is, you know, because it could be gone like that, you know. When you're going through your day, your day-to-day, whatever it is that you do, you don't think about being able to walk. You don't think about being able to talk. You don't think about the simple things that were given. Mm-hmm. And through that accident, I wasn't able to move for, you know, several weeks. They had come and moved me up to my house. You know, I can remember at that time, that was when I started thanking God for, you know, the health that I have, you know. Being able to walk and talk, to think with a clear mind, you know. I could be a vegetable right now, you know, because of that motorcycle accident. You know, once again, God spared my life. You know, so through that, I was able to get 2 years and, you know, three and four and five, and life is good, you know. I'm living the dream. I'm sober. I've got a great job. Everything is good. And I got involved with a girl who was smoking weed. And I wasn't doing anything in recovery. You know, I was just coming to meetings. And every time we'd hang out, she'd be high, and I'd start thinking, maybe one hit. What's going to happen? One hit, you know? I can do it. No one's going to know. It's not drinking. Why not? And once again, I walked out of a Thursday night meeting, and I said to Suzanne, fuck these people and fuck these meetings. I can't do this no more and blah, 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 blah. I was absolutely insane at 6 years of sobriety. I mean, absolutely insane. And I asked Suzanne to sponsor me. I sat in a Tuesday night meeting, and Joe and I had gotten to the point where we had become such good friends that recovery was not what it was all about between us, you know. We'd make a plan to get together to do step work and be like, ah, I'm too tired, you know. I got something going on, you know. It was more of a friendship than it was, you know, sponsee, and I needed someone to be accountable to, you know. Not discounting Joe, but it was just a friendship, you know. So I sat in that Tuesday night meeting, and I looked at Suzanne, and I liked the program that she worked, and I thought, if you don't ask her to sponsor you tonight, you're going to get loaded. And my second thought is, what are people going to think that you have a female sponsor? And I thought to myself, who gives a shit what people think? What's more important, you know? And Suzanne walked me through the 12 steps, and that woman saved my life, you know? I worked the steps in my first 2 years of sobriety, and then I worked them again at 6 years, and I'll tell you the difference. When I worked them at 6 years, is I was able to peel that onion a little bit further. I was able to see the things deep down inside that make me tick, you know, and I learned a lot. And, you know, thank God for that. At that time in my life, that was like the darkest hour of my life. I can remember the depression I was in and thinking to myself, is this all there is? Go to meetings, go to work, come home, humdrum. It was just like, God, when does it give? And I worked the steps, and it was just like, you know, they say you hear the pop. I heard the pop, you know. Exactly right. Yeah, I heard the pop, you know. Once again, it was proven to me that Alcoholics Anonymous is an action program, you know. I can't sit in meetings and just get this thing. I have to take action, you know. I have to work the steps. I have to live the steps. I have to live by the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have to work with others. I have to treat people outside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous the same way I treat them in meetings, you know. It's real easy to sit in Alcoholics Anonymous and practice Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not very easy for me to practice Alcoholics Anonymous when I'm at work and there's a million and one things going off around me and I want to throat punch someone, you know. You know, I hate to say it, but Jesse was witness to it Friday evening, you know. He stopped by work, and I literally just wanted to choke someone at work. And I said some things, and afterward I got home that night, and I thought, What a great example of Alcoholics Anonymous you were tonight, you know? Thank God I'm judged on my actions and not my thoughts. You know, because if I was judged on my thoughts, I'd have been locked up a long time ago. A long time ago. So I worked the steps at 6 years. Life was going really well. You know, just living life, you know, having a great time. And, you know, the character defects, you know, just when you think that everything's okay with one character defect, another one pops up, you know. And I ask God to remove it from me, you know, and I'm hitting my knees and I'm asking, and then another one pops up, you know, and then another one pops up, you know, and, you know, these character defects will do to me what alcohol and drugs did to me when I was out there drinking and using, you know. And I've got some gnarly character defects, you know. If you're new tonight and you think you're coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and it's all nirvana, it is your first 3 months. After that, man, them character defects start cropping up, and the next thing you know, you're creating wreckage in sobriety. And I have created some absolute wreckage in sobriety. I'll tell you a funny story about character defects. Luke and I went on a motorcycle ride. We rode up to Oregon, and we stopped in Mount Shasta and spent the night, and about 3-4 in the morning, the alarm clock goes off, you know. There's a nightstand in between the two beds, the alarm clock's ringing, and I'm trying to shut this thing off. The next thing you know, I grab this alarm clock, and I'm pounding it off the nightstand. And he looked at me, and he's like, "Mike, just pull out the plug." You know? Character defects, you know? Character defects, you know? Because when they start kicking, rational thinking is not working, you know? It's the insanity of the disease, you know? That's what starts thinking. That's what starts acting. You know, so we come home from that trip, and I walk into my house and I hear the buzzer on my stove going off. Now this is 3 or 4 days later, so I walk in the house, the buzzer's going off on the stove, and I'm fooling with it, and it stops. So I go upstairs, I'm putting stuff away, and I hear the buzzer again. And I go down there, and I'm fooling with it, and this thing just will not stop. So my best thinking is open the drawer. I have a hammer in the drawer to smash the stove to shut this buzzer up. Rational thinking, right? So the next thing you know, I do that. Two wires arc, shoot sparks, burn my kitchen linoleum. Next thing I know, I'm like $3,000 or $4,000 into this, and I learned a great lesson, you know? You know? Think. You know, don't act, you know, count to 10, you know, so, you know, it's all the little things like that through recovery where I learn, you know. I have never received direction from someone in Alcoholics Anonymous where I said, "That's a great idea, I'm going to try that." No, what happens is someone gives me direction, I go and do it my way, bang my head against the wall. I go back to them and tell them about it, and they say, "Why didn't you try it the way I told you?" And I'm like, "That's a great idea." I go back again. I make a bigger mess than I did the time before, bang my head against the wall, go back to them, tell them again. Once again, they repeat the direction to me. Go back, bang my head against the wall, and maybe about the seventh or eighth time, it's like, you know what, maybe he was right. You know? And that's how it's been in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I have not come in here and I have not done this thing perfectly, and I still to this day don't do this thing perfectly. You know? You know, that's the reason I still come to meetings. That's the reason I still talk to other alcoholics. That's the reason I sponsor people, you know? This doesn't go away, you know? This disease does not go away. It's still about drinking, but today it's about living life, you know? Today it's about acting like a gentleman when I'm out in public. Acting like a gentleman when I'm dealing with ladies, you know? Acting like a man, not banging my rattle in my high chair when I don't get my way, you know? Yeah, I want to do that, but I've stuck around here long enough that I think of the things that you guys share in meetings that I was in the night before that I think, let's do that, you know? You know, this job that I'm in, I worked there for 13 years as an employee, and I so bad wanted to become the manager of the department that I work in. And I left that job, and they called me in March of 2014, and they offered me the management position. And I accepted that management position, and I'll tell you, I could not do that job if it were not for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because I practice the principles that you guys teach me here in my job daily, you know. Talk to people, you know, with love, with patience, with tolerance, you know, daily. It's God, you know, help me to remember that I'm just a man amongst men and a worker amongst workers, no better, no less, you know. Just because I'm the manager doesn't mean that I can talk down to people or that I could treat people poorly or I could bark orders at them, you know. I have to treat people the way I want to be treated. And I'll tell you, some days that's hard. Some days that's really hard to do that. You know, but I keep coming back and I keep talking to you guys and you guys keep giving me direction. And thank God for that. You know, there are so many people in this room tonight who have helped me in my sobriety. You know, I could stand here all night long and tell you of instances and situations that I was in and how we sat and we talked about things. I've cried, I've laughed, I've been angry with you guys, I've you know, the whole gamut of emotions, you know, I've felt with you guys in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, but at the end of the day, you're my brothers and sisters in recovery. You know, you teach me how to live, because I didn't know how to live when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. All that I knew was me, you know, and if you didn't have something for me, I wanted nothing to do with you, you know. What could I, you know, thief, cheat, steal, manipulate out of you? I remember being at work one day and a guy asking me if I had compassion for another employee, and I said, well, what's compassion? You know, 32, 33 years old, I had no idea what compassion was, you know. And, you know, I've learned to have compassion for others in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've learned to love people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and in turn, when I love you guys here, it makes it easier for me to love the people out there, you know. It makes me easy to love the lady who's writing a check at the grocery store when I'm in a hurry, you know. For Christ's sakes, don't you have a debit card, lady? Come on, I'm in a hurry, you know. That happened to me tonight on the way home from the grocery store. Little old lady pulls out in front of me, and it's like, come on, I'm in a hurry. And I was like, what's the hurry? Slow down. What's the hurry? And that was something that I learned in that motorcycle accident. What's the hurry? Where am I running to? You know, I'm in a hurry to get somewhere that's really not that important. You know, all day long, running. I've got to do this, got to do that, got to do this. And then I forget and I miss the little things that are going on that I should be noticing. You know, probably about 8 years of sobriety, I remember backing out of my driveway and looking across the street, and the neighbor had this big bush with these bright purple flowers on it. And the girl that I was seeing at the time, I looked at them and I said, hey, look at those flowers, how cool they are. She's like, yeah, they're really pretty. And I drove away and I'm thinking to myself, what the hell's wrong with you, man? Thinking flowers are pretty, you know? And then it came to me, it's like, you're noticing God's creation, you know? You're noticing the little things in life, you know? Because when I'm running all day long, I'm missing all those opportunities, one after the other, after the other, after the other. And one of the things that Suzanne taught me when we didn't rework the steps at 6 years was to ask God in the morning what it is that you could do for him. And help me to stay present, help me to be in the moment when it happens so I could acknowledge it. And I'll tell you, that's hard some days. That is hard to be in the moment. You know, and every once in a while, it'll happen, and it dawns on me. You asked him this morning, that'd be a service, you know. I was at work one day, and an employee pulled up. We were getting a big storm that weekend. He had his kids in his truck, and as we're talking, I looked down at his tires, and his tires were completely bald. And I said to him, dude, you shouldn't be driving your kids in the car with the tires the way that they are. And he's like, yeah, I'm strapped. I don't have any money. And then I'm standing there talking to him. You asked God this morning, what is it that I could do for you? And I called the tire shop across the street, and I said, go over there and, you know, put four tires on his truck. And I don't tell you that to brag. I tell you that to let you know the feeling that I had inside, you know, of being able to help someone, of being able to think through the weekend when it was pouring rain and he's out driving his kids around that he's safe, you know. Prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't give a shit about you and your kids driving in the rain. But you guys have taught me how to care for people, you know, that it's not about the money, you know, it's about what I can do for someone else. And that guy was a pastor, and a few days later he told me that I'd be blessed in a way that I'd never known before. And several weeks after that, I had met the woman that I had married, you know, and I truly believe that that was an act of God, you know. God blessed me with somebody. And so I got married in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was the first time I was married. Got married at 40 years old. I had a great time. But this past year, we've had some rocky times, and we had some discussions over the summer. We had some discussions in October. We sat one night, and she was a normie. She drank. And I came home from work one day, and she said, I'd really like a glass of wine. I said, have a glass of wine. Well, I don't want to drink alone. It's never bothered you before. Have a glass of wine. So my head starts going, and I'm thinking, she wants me to drink with her. And I said to her, I said, does it bother you that I don't drink? She's like, yeah, kind of. And man, I'll tell you, it was a gut shot to me. It was an absolute gut shot, you know. For someone who supported me and was behind me, for her to say that, it was just like, ugh. And I knew something was up, and we talked again, and Merry Christmas to me. Christmas Day, we decided we'd get a divorce. And thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous once again, you know. I was able to sit with that woman, discuss our marriage, discuss our divorce, discuss the things that we've acquired since we've been married, and not one time did I have to call her a bad name. Not one time did I have to raise my voice. Not one time did I have to raise a hand, you know. Once again, Alcoholics Anonymous gets to work in my life. I get to be a gentleman with a woman that I want to choke, you know. And I'll tell you something funny. Alcoholics Anonymous and God, how they work in my life. There's a girl that I work with who was best friends with my ex-wife growing up. And I was driving into work that Monday, and I said to myself, you need to let so-and-so know what's going on before she hears it, you know, third party. And I went in and I told her, and she was speechless, didn't know what to say, and walked away. And a few days later, she came to me, and she said, I have something to tell you. And I said, I don't know how much more I could take at this point. I said, I'm about at my breaking point. And she said, I really need to tell you this. And I could tell that she was upset. So she went on to tell me that her husband had seen my ex-wife with another guy several times in the city where he works. And I'll tell you, the weight that was lifted from my shoulders. Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, number one, I never thought I'd get married. Number two, if I was married and had to go through a divorce, I probably would have ended up in jail because I had an anger problem, you know. And when she told me that, I didn't feel anger. I felt release, you know. I felt like I was able to let her go, you know. Yeah, it hurt, but I was able to walk away from it, you know. And a few days later, I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I dislike when we say the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting. For the simple reason that it takes too long. I want to get out and smoke. Simple enough. I'm in a hurry. Once again, I'm in a hurry. Gotta go, gotta go. So as we're saying the Lord's Prayer, for once in my life, I hear where it says, forgive us our trespasses, and forgive those who trespass against us. And God spoke to me, and he said, you need to forgive her for what she did to you. And my second thought was, No. Now, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have anything to push down on that thought. I didn't have a drink to take. I didn't have a drug to take. I didn't have anything to take to push that thought down, so that thought stayed with me. And about 2 weeks later, I confronted her, and I told her that I knew what was going on. She wanted to get into a discussion about it. I said, I don't need the gory details. I don't need any excuses. I know what went on. You know, we're going to split, and that's the end of the story. And a week later, as she was moving her stuff out, we sat in the living room and we talked. And I was upset at the time, and I said to her, I want to let you know I forgive you for what you've done. And I'll tell you, it was probably one of the hardest things I've said to someone, one of the hardest things to forgive someone. But I knew that if I didn't forgive her, I wouldn't have been able to have been set free from that relationship. And where else do you get that besides Alcoholics Anonymous and God? You know, where? Where? I searched for that all my life, you know, how to love people, how to be kind to people, how to be compassionate with people. I found it in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. $2 a meeting. How do you beat that deal? You know, you go to a therapist, you spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, and you still never get to the core, you know. We get to come here several nights a week, throw a couple bucks in the basket, have coffee with people that we probably would never sit and have coffee with. We get to hear their stories, they get to hear ours, and we get to love each other, you know, in a way that we never knew we could love each other, you know. And, I never imagined being where I'm at, you know, 3 months into a divorce. You know, I thought it would have been a basket case, you know, and once again, God doing for me what I can't do for myself, you know. My boss told me Friday, he said, I have not seen you this happy in many, many months. He said, it's nice to see you back. And Alcoholics Anonymous, once again, you know, grateful to be free. You know, grateful that I'm not in bondage anymore, you know, and I'm not talking down on marriage. I'm just talking down on, you know, I'm comfortable again, you know, I'm comfortable again, you know, I'm feeling comfortable in meetings again. I'm feeling comfortable talking to you again. You know, it's a great gift I've received here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Me and another buddy were talking last night. I'll say this and I'll sit down. We were talking about, you know, recovery and, you know, some people do this and some people do that and some people make it this complicated and they try this and they try that and, you know, sometimes we so complicate Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I said, in 12 years, what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is go to meetings, work with others, stay close to God, and treat others around you the way you want to be treated. Pretty simple, you know. But I don't understand why, as alcoholics, we have to reinvent the wheel, you know. Why is it that we have to figure this thing out in 50 different ways to get to the same spot, you know? If you're new tonight or you're coming back after a relapse and your head's telling you you're a piece of shit and you can't do this deal, welcome back to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what my head told me. My head said I couldn't do this. I couldn't stay sober. And if I can do it, you can do it, you know. All it takes is willingness and humility, you know. That's what it took for me. Because when my ego starts getting too big, for some reason God has a way of stepping on me and reminding me who's in charge. It's not me. So I want to thank you guys for everything that you blessed me with, what you've given me in Alcoholics Anonymous, and thanks for letting me share tonight.
Michael, another hand. All right. Thank you, Michael, for speaking tonight. The speaker will be available after the meeting to thank up here at the podium or back there by the door somewhere here. Also, thank you to anyone that has a commitment at this meeting want to thank Linda for greeting, Jim for birthdays, Albert and Rick for coffee and setup, and our readers, Dank and Janet. And please stay for cake after the meeting. And I've asked Angel to close us with a serenity prayer.
Stop, Billy. Stop, Billy, boy.
Grab my hand.
You're a dick.
Come on in. Come back, room.
Hey, look.
You can have these shoulders. Ladies, here.
Here we go. And I didn't want to thank two people that are here when I came in here 24 years ago. And that's Jerry and Adam. Thank you guys for being here today.
God,
Glenn, and to the things that cannot change,
to the things that can,
and in wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
Keep God's path, what did you want?